Today is July 14th. This is Jay Leask, and you're listening to On the Spot.
Hello, this is Craig Janke. I am also here with Jay on the spot. And happy Bastille Day. Viva la France.
My bad. Not the 14th. I know you're excited about that. It's actually July 18th. I forgot to update my script. But Craig,
oh, that's okay,
always Jay. Good to be with you, whether it's Bastille Day or not.
Yes, good to be with you too, Jay. It's always fun.
So Craig, last week we gave our listeners a quick bio of each other. Rather than repeating that, let's add a little something. So Craig, tell me a little bit something about yourself that you weren't able to tell us last week.
Okay, well, you know, I think I told you last week I was a 20-year IT veteran. So I've been doing, you know, SharePoint and that kind of stuff, front-end to back-end development. But what I didn't tell you is I started out with a degree in psychology and I worked child welfare for 3 years out with abused, neglected, and troubled youth for the first 3 years outside of college. And while it was a very rewarding job when things went well, when things didn't go well, not so much. And then coupled the fact that I think I was making $25,000 a year, didn't pay the bills living in Chicago very well. So I then moved on to bigger and better things and eventually went back to school, got an IT degree, Master's of Science in Information Systems, and as they say, the rest is history.
All right. Well, I also started my career coming out of college not in IT. I went to college, got a computer science degree, but then I then spent a year and a half in the liquor industry, and I managed a fine wine shop.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was awesome. I got to schmooze with all of the C-suite that lived in the greater New York area. But, you know, managing a wine shop is tempting. Let's just say it's tempting. So I found my way back into IT. I've done everything from owning my own consulting agency to obviously on the sales side. And actually, fun fact, at AvPoint, I'm not just a strategic advisor. I'm also an account manager in our defense and national intelligence side. So a little bit of fun there for me.
Cool. Almost like Mission Impossible meets Molly A.J.
Almost, but not quite. So, Craig, let's talk a little bit about what's been happening this week.
As you well know, because we discussed this later in the show, Microsoft Inspire was a conference that just wrapped off. It's Microsoft's big partner conference, and there were some pretty cool announcements that came out of there. We will talk about that later in the show when we get to our guest, Dr. Raymond Tsai, AvPoint CTO and Chief Marketing Officer. But one of the big announcements came out there was the introduction of Microsoft 365. Basically, it's their enterprise plan where they have Office 365 rolled in with Windows 10 and their mobility and security suite. So just they're trying to come in to the enterprise with a complete package to help people or help enterprises, you know, fully integrate their products and solutions.
In the enterprise suite, they have unified communications built in if you have an E5 license, but on they also have a small business package. So if you're listening to us and curious about what that is, they've got that small business section. The enterprise section is really cool. They also announced a bunch of stuff around Dynamics 365 and LinkedIn, where the purchase of LinkedIn in the last year, which was a major purchase, is finally becoming integrated with Dynamics 365. They announced some things around Azure Stack with new hardware partners for those people who are considering using cognitive services or anything like that, but are worried about going to pure cloud. There's a lot. And I think the interview we recorded with Dux earlier this week does a great job at summarizing it. So rather than spending any more time talking about it, let's talk about something else.
We will have a link to some of those announcements in our show notes, so people can go out there and find out more information by themselves too.
Absolutely. You know, another announcement that came out this week, it's a little bit more IT pro, a little more technical, but I think it is useful for our business listeners to know, is with SharePoint Online and OneDrive, Microsoft increased the max path from 256 Unicode characters to 400, which is huge when it comes to migrations because it now makes migrating content in very deep folders just a little bit easier. They also added support for hashtag and percent symbols in the file name. So, I mean, it's silly things, but they are things that IT pros have been complaining about for years, and they affect the business user. You know, when you're expecting something to be in a certain location or to have a certain file name, it's nice to see that Microsoft is listening to these what sound like minor complaints, but are really major hurdles.
Yeah, no, and I know that that's been an issue that, like you said, that business has complained about for a while. To me, I've always complained that the URLs are way too long and there should be a better way to shorten them. But, you know, if you're moving from one platform to another, you kind of need those big long ones, especially like you said, with the deep nested folders.
Yep. I mean, don't get me wrong. Deep nested folders are horrible practice, but sometimes you are where you are and you just need to get to the next step. So I shouldn't have gone there. Let's move on. Verizon was hacked. Tell me about it.
Yes, 14 million users were exposed. So it was not a good thing. They were working with a third-party vendor, I believe, who left a server on an AWS server unattended. So they left the endpoint open, and you know, as that tends to happen, open endpoints lead to unwanted guests. So somebody came in and exposed their data, and it was not really a good thing. And, you know, I think we've talked before on the last episode, safety first. So, you know, you really want to make sure that you're securing your enterprise, securing your endpoints, because, you know, this is obviously not good for them. And, you know, besides the cost that they're going to have to spend to, you know, for credit reports and to make things right with their users, it's also just bad PR. And I think the latest number I've seen is that every bad data breach breeds like $2 million worth of bad PR. So straight off your bottom line.
You know, not 6 weeks ago, the U.S. government had an agency report that data had been found on another AWS server. It was a test server. It was a server run by a consultant who was developing software for them, but they had classified data out there. It's happening more and more. If you are developing software and you are looking at the cloud especially, but even if you're developing software in-house, you have to have a process for looking at privacy data, for looking at security, and making sure that throughout the entire thing you're doing, it's often referred to as privacy by design, that you are considering privacy and security as you develop. It's not just an afterthought to try and avoid these things. It's huge.
Both Amazon and Azure, you know, Microsoft with Azure, have great tools for, you know, if you use their platforms right, you shouldn't have this problem. So it's inexperienced people doing things, shortcutting things and getting around, trying to get around hurdles to, just to make their lives easier, and they leave things open. So, you know, and it kind of falls into that compliance and security issue that we talk about a lot in our line of work with AvePoint and, you know, collaboration systems. Put things where they belong and secure them, and safety first again, you know, try to make sure that people can't get to things that you don't want them to.
Yeah, continuing down the security line, so I mentioned I'm in the public sector, U.S. federal space a lot. So the United States government has said they're going to limit the use of software from Kaspersky Labs. Kaspersky Labs is a Moscow-based software company, often used by government agencies in the cybersecurity space. The U.S. government over the last 6 months or so has been doing due diligence and lots of research into whether or not Kaspersky Labs can be trusted, or if they're too close to Russian intelligence. And they've decided that they need to limit the use for a little while as they try and figure out how trustful this company can be. It's interesting. We are a software vendor and we sell to the public sector, to the U.S. federal government. And one of the questions we come up against a lot is your software developed in the United States? And that's a question for another conversation. But what is interesting is that this is a Moscow-based software company selling to the United States federal government. And you just see this a lot. You know, Microsoft, for example, has thousands of developers outside the United States developing things like SharePoint and Windows, and they sell to the U.S. federal government. And so all software companies have to go through various programs,
vetting
programs to make sure their software is safe. So it's just interesting to see a cybersecurity company based in Moscow working with the U.S. federal government now under spotlight. That's right. Now questioned.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting and something we definitely will keep our eye on. And, you know, as we talk through these podcasts, you know, security and compliance is a fan favorite of ours. So we will definitely be talking into that category and how it affects the business and, you know, at the C-suite level, things that people need to think about and enterprises things to think about. And a different note, Google Glass is back.
Speaking
with your augmented reality. Yes. So I know you like the Google Glass. Would you like to elaborate on why it's your fan favorite?
Well, conceptually, the Google Glass is awesome. It You wear it like glasses. You get a little window over your right eye, and it augments what you're looking at. The concept was really cool, but they released it for consumers. It was $1,500 to $2,000, and it just didn't take off because nobody wants to spend that much money to experiment on something, and B, it's a little bit creepy and invasive as you're walking down the street and it's using facial recognition to tell you who you're looking at, and C, the applications weren't there. You remember last week we talked about apps in the Microsoft phone store. They just weren't there. It was the same problem. You're spending $2,000 on a piece of hardware that doesn't have the apps. But in this case, Google Glass, being developed by X Company, who is part of the Alphabet Corporation, which owns Google. Google Glass has come out with the Enterprise Edition, and they're working with partners specifically to solve business problems. And I love this because this is exactly where augmented reality can take off.
Right, yeah, in the enterprise. And I think that, you know, we've seen a lot of things that, especially in an article or two that we'll post in the show notes so that people can read about it more, but a lot of productivity is gained by employees being able to do things hands-free and, you know, see checklists and those kind of things.
So here's some examples. GE mechanics are using Glass software that gives them instructional videos on the spot where they're working. So you can be sitting there working on machinery, not sure how to fix what you're looking at. It knows where you are. It knows what you're looking at. It'll interact with your hands and motions, and you can hit play on a video that'll show you how to do what you're trying to do. They say efficiency of 8 to 12% improvement for their mechanics. Another example is DHL has added Google Glass into its order picking process, and they're saying they're seeing a supply chain efficiency of 15%. So there's all sorts of stuff where specific use cases are being addressed with augmented reality, and this is where I love it. It's, you know, it's one thing to try and get someone to buy it for home use or for sitting at their computer. It's a little bit harder to sell that, but you can get an employee in a factory to put this on, and they can immediately gain access to things that otherwise they would either have to have a stack of papers or a computer terminal, and it's right there on their body. It's not an extra hand. I love it. I think this is fantastic.
Yeah, well, another use that I've seen, not necessarily for this, but its competitor, the HoloLens by Microsoft, when they were rolling it out, and, you know, another one, I think it might have been just a little bit ahead of time, people start to think, what are the personal use for it? And I think you're touched on something that it's not necessarily designed for home use yet, but the business is where I see it. But I saw one of the use cases there where, like, doctors in a medical school could teach and the students could wear it, and you could kind of see a 3D representation of the human body, and they, you know, instead of having to read through a textbook, it's right there in front of them. So I think education now becomes even more and more interesting.
I mean, think back to Star Wars. You've got every major battle is planned out with the general in Star Wars who brings up this holographic display. Well, in Star Wars, it's being displayed and everyone can see it. But if everyone's wearing a Google Glass, in real life today, the general can bring up this display, interact with it based on what their Google Glass is seeing, and everyone else can see it based on theirs. I think it's fantastic. But, all right, let's take a step back.
All right. Okay, so you brought Star Trek in there, and I think immediately we have to jump to the Chinese scientists that were able to teleport an object into space this week, which is really cool. So, you know, we're talking quantum mechanics, we're talking, you know, groundbreaking quantum networks, we're talking shooting protons to a satellite 300 miles away. You know, it doesn't get any cooler than that.
But let me put some reality to this real quick. So we're talking about photon transportation, not human transportation, because there's a real existential conversation about if you're transporting a human from point A to point B, what comes out at point B, is that the same human, or is that a facsimile, a copy of that human, and is the original then destroyed?
Yeah.
I know, it's heavy.
There's been a couple movies around that. I can't remember the Christian Bale movie where he was a magician and they were doing teleportation.
Yes.
So with Hugh Jackman, it escapes me what it is.
Is that The Illusionist? I can't remember which one, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
But yeah, so is Hugh Jackman really... Because he was the guy doing the teleportation, I believe, and using the teleportation, the Tesla teleportation device, I believe. And he was the guy. So interesting stuff.
So that goes a little existential. Let's stay existential. Elon Musk is back at it again. And in this case, we're not talking about self-driving cars. We're talking about warnings.
Yes. No. Yeah. It's going to be a threat to the human race. So basically, we're talking getting in the sci-fi realm again for some reason. But the Terminator and, you know, computers getting enough intelligence where they don't need humans and decide that they're a risk to their survival. So, you know, that is interesting stuff. And again, like you were saying, now I don't know if I want to drive Elon Musk's car because I'm afraid it's going to turn on me. And then does it become a Transformer? We're all in the movies here.
I know. We're going a little crazy here. It's just interesting. He's so well known in the tech industry for all the positive things he's doing and for the advances his company is making. It's interesting to see him then jump out and be like, no, really, you need to take this seriously. And in one of the things he says in the article in the show notes, you'll see, he flat out says, we cannot wait to react to AI. We have to get in front of it. We have to regulate it, because if we wait to react, it's going to be too late. So it is an interesting conversation. It's not something that I think we need to get into in too much depth, but because of where he is in the tech industry, I thought it was good to talk about. Let's talk about tech industry. One more thing. We talked about it last week. It comes up a little bit in our interview later today. The Surface Phone is in the news again, my friend. It's coming. It's going to happen. Microsoft Surface Phone. The rumor of the day is it is at Microsoft in Redmond being used by executives and that we should see it. I want to say it said September, October, after the completion of the current Windows 10 rollout.
Yeah, so that'd be pretty cool, because if it comes out like within a year, I'm on the Galaxy S6 active. It is a very durable phone, but I've had it for 2 years now, and I'm outside of contract, and I don't really want a new phone. But if the Surface Phone comes out, I may have to give it a ride and see how it goes.
So I've got some links in the notes, but there's a video on one of the links. Some quick facts: 20 megabyte Carl Zeiss camera, removable battery, don't see that every day anymore, and a pen, which if the pen is based off the same technology of the Surface Pen, this is going to be some cool stuff. So I'm really excited. But that's enough for now. We've been talking for about 15 minutes, and really, this isn't why you're here. You're here to hear what Dux has to say about Inspire.
Okay, I hate to cut you off, but I got to let you say it. I got to tell you one thing. It's
What's
the
that?
Prestige. We couldn't go without telling people what the real
you, yes.
movie was. So
yes,
now back to you and Dux.
All right, so here we are with Dux Raymond Tsai. Very excited to have you, Dux. Dux, you're the CTO of AvePoint Public Sector and the global CMO here. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yes. Happy Monday. It's earlier for Craig in Chicago than it is out here in DC, but it still feels significantly earlier than it may be. So Dux, you and I met, I met you 6 years ago now, I want to say, at SharePoint Saturday, the conference in DC. You were the keynote speaker and incredibly inspiring. I bring that up because that tends to be your thing. You're a very inspiring speaker. You talk about how you've gotten people to dance. You always bring a big personality and high energy to the room. And I think, generally speaking, everyone I've ever spoken to about you has been very excited to see you speak. How do you do it?
Thank you, sir. Well, first of all my taking you to dinner and lunch finally paid off. You're saying good things about me. No, for me, I've been in this business over 20 years now, and I feel like we need some energy and we need some just vibrance into the tech ecosystem. So why not, right? The way I look at it is we're in an exciting field, and going up on stage, dancing, singing shouldn't be out of the ordinary.
I agree. The more entertaining, the more people are going to listen, the more people are going to actually pay attention to what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. And the way I think about it, it's edutainment. The way I think about it is how I learn, right? If I'm engaged, I will learn. Although I realize too that one cannot overdo it, because if you overdo it, it'll be either cheesy or you lose your credibility. So it's that fine line. But the more I'm engaged, I learn, and it sticks.
We posted out on Twitter expecting a few comments back, and that we were going to be interviewing you. And Jared Matfis commented, he had a funny story. He said, I met Dux after donating to the Philippines Hurricane Relief Fund when he was offering that up as a donation prize. What inspired you to donate yourself as a prize for that fund?
So I'm a firm believer in giving back, and in many different ways we can. So for the longest time, if there's any major calamity out there, be it a hurricane in the Philippines or Japan or earthquake in Australia, I would pretty much do a virtual fundraising. Essentially, first of all, I would connect with companies and communities or people who would be willing to donate their time, donate prize money, or donate anything as a raffle. And then what I would do is I would call out to the rest of the community and say, hey, look, go donate to Red Cross, go donate to whatever charity you want, and just show me proof, and then I'll put you in the raffle. And I think Jared won the raffle prize where I donated my own time for that benefit. So that's how I met Jared. But it's just something little that I do, and every opportunity I can to provide some kind of help to the rest of the world, I do it.
Yeah, you use hashtag tech for good a bunch, and more recently, I think I saw you posted about your trip to Uganda. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I was very fortunate to be involved in a charity work we do through our church where we support an orphanage in Uganda, which is also a boarding school. And then last year, they're asking help to jumpstart a tech program for the graduating seniors there. So I got involved. We've raised some funds and we raised some also visibility into it. And companies donated software, Pluralsight donated training. So I went there. We set up a computer lab. We did a boot camp on web technologies. So it was great. And as a result, it gained some visibility via the tech community through Microsoft, but also through AppPoint. So as a result of that, AppPoint stood up formally our philanthropic arm, where we focus on three things: software education or technology education and the local community. So the work I did at Uganda is part of the educational initiatives we have for AppPoint Philanthropy. And then we also provide free software to qualified nonprofits through TechSoup. And then each of our office supports local charities around the world. So it's a great effort. And again, like I said, if we have the opportunity to do that, I believe all of us should be involved in one way or another.
Yeah, those are really great programs that you mentioned. And I did enjoy, I mean, I follow you on Twitter, you know, even before I came to AppPoint. And, you know, I've seen you speak at different conferences and events, and you're always, as Jay said, brings a lot of energy. But it's nice to follow you on Twitter and now Yammer and see all the things that you're doing and the cool opportunities that you're providing, not only for AppPoint employees but for other people around the globe. So you know, the Uganda trip was really cool to see some of the pictures and experiences, read some of the experiences you were having. You also on Twitter used the hashtag Shift Happens a lot. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, no. So first of all, thanks, Craig. And you know, the way I think about it, we're in this very exciting and transformative time where if you look at the world and how technology is evolving, I say every company now is a technology company. And I would also argue everyone in an organization is a technologist. If you don't want to admit to that, or if you're still denying that fact, then it's a problem. For me, when I think about the shift, right, that we're going through, be it in technology, be it in business, we should be open to it. So, for example, in the technology space in the world we live in, right, is this shift from on-premises to the cloud. 3-4 years ago, people were like, ah, that's just a fad, ain't going to happen. But it's happening. It's just a matter of when. The shift around business, where you look at the top companies today, from Airbnb to Uber to Facebook to all these tech companies. I mean, who would have thought 5 years ago these companies would overtake the traditional organizations out there like GM, Time Warner? Again, that's yet another shift we're seeing. The other big shift we're seeing is around the democratization of technology, where because of the cloud, because of the web, now the barrier to entry to technology is so low that it provides opportunities to every single person. And it's that shift from back in the days where I got to get a 5-year college degree and get my diploma to be involved in this ecosystem. Those days are gone. So the way I think about the shift happening is it's happening so fast that if we're not on board, then we're going to be left behind and we should be open to it. So that's the kind of shift I'm excited about, that especially all of us working in the tech industry should definitely be a part of.
You know, you talk about Shift. Back when I was in college, nobody ever really talked about the importance of partners, but we've seen organizations like Google and Microsoft really embrace that partner ecosystem. Last week, we got to experience Microsoft Inspire, the new brand for the World Partner Conference. You know, how was that experience?
You know, I got to tell you, this is my eighth Worldwide Partner Conference, which is now rebranded as Inspire. And I think this is the biggest shift for Microsoft, not only for partners, but as an organization. And boy, it's going to be a great time to be a Microsoft partner, because at the end of the day, the whole week, the theme was Microsoft is not just a partner-led company, it's a partner-first company. So now their focus on partners is much more stronger from all aspects of Microsoft, from engineering to sales to marketing. So it was an exciting event, and you know, talk about Shift. It's going to be a big, big shift for Microsoft.
Nice, nice. So can you talk about some of the things that you learned there and some of the key takeaways from the conference?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's really three big learnings that I walked away with. First and foremost is, again, the focus on partners, where Microsoft, because of the cloud, for them to succeed, they realized that they need this partner ecosystem to be working with them closely. One statistics they brought up is with the growth of the cloud and edge devices, Satya was pushing this concept of intelligent cloud and intelligent edge, which is a $4.5 trillion opportunity. So that's a lot of money, a lot of great opportunity for partners. So one of the biggest change or shift, if you may, is the idea of partners should be really side by side working closely with Microsoft in three ways. Number one, when they build technologies, they want to build with partners. I mean, back in the days, Microsoft would build a software, the developers would go at it, the engineers would go at it, and then they would push it out there for partners to figure out and partners to sell. But what they're saying is, look, we want some top partners that we'll work with, that we'll share the roadmap with, that we'll get feedback and build technologies with. So that's a big change. The second big change is they want to go to market with partners more. So it's not just a one-off events or webinars or brochures, but really put together a holistic go-to-market program on how to market not only Microsoft technologies, but partner technologies as well. Last but not the least is they want to sell with partners. Now, what they mean by that is essentially, obviously, partners build technologies on top of the Microsoft stack, but what they're talking about is their people, their sales team would actually not only sell Microsoft solutions, but also sell partner solutions as well. That's part of their scorecard. So that's really exciting and opens up a lot of opportunities for partners. So that's the first takeaway, where the focus on partners is much more stronger and much more bigger. The second is Microsoft is streamlining how they look at their technology stack. Back in the days, or as we're used to, right, technologies were broken into things like Office 365, Dynamics 365, Azure, Windows devices. But Microsoft wants to reposition it and simplify it into four core pillars. First, it's what they call modern workplace. So when you think about modern workplace, is the day-to-day productivity, day-to-day work, which includes Office 365, Windows, EMS, anything that has to do with productivity. In fact, as a part of modern workplace, they launch Microsoft 365, which is essentially a bundling of Windows, Office 365, and EMS. The second pillar is business applications. So think Dynamics 365 and the App Source. Any business-focused solution will fall under that pillar. The third pillar is data and AI. This would be looking at the advanced workloads that Azure provides, things like cognitive services, machine learning, big data, Cortana Intelligence Suite. So anything that revolves around data and AI would fall under the third pillar. The fourth pillar is infrastructure and devices. So any of their hardware investment, any infrastructure investment will fall in that pillar. So as you'll start seeing, Microsoft messaging would just be streamlined into those four pillars versus product specific. Because at the end of the day, the way we work, the way we consume these products is based on those four pillars that they limited it to. The third big takeaway is from a selling perspective, they're going to focus heavily on what's called industry solutions. While Microsoft already kind of had that, but they're going to double down and focus more. And their sales organization would have teams focus on industry solutions. And when we talk about industry solutions, this would be like your government, education, financial services, healthcare, retail. And their sellers, their selling team, account team would be focused around those industry solutions or industries versus having selling team just selling Office 365 or SharePoint and whatnot. So as you can see, it's a big change, it's a big shift, but all in all, I think it's a great transformation of Microsoft.
Nice. So I guess the follow-up question is CTO and Chief Marketing Officer, really, CTO of the public sector and Chief Marketing Officer of AvePoint. Where do you see AvePoint fitting into that?
AvePoint, I think, as a company, falls into all those major buckets. Number one, the exciting part is we have our technologies already transitioned in the cloud. So what that means, it further accelerates our technology to these different areas. So our technologies that helps customer migrate, manage, and protect and accelerate their investments in the Microsoft cloud certainly falls under the modern workplace pillar. It falls under the business applications pillar and even the data and AI. And then from an industry specific, as you may already know, we do a lot in public sector. We do a lot in financial services, education, healthcare. And then I think the most exciting part is the first point I talked about where they're now focusing more on partners through the one commercial partner organization. It means that we're already working closely with Microsoft, but we're going to work closer with Microsoft with engineering and also selling a lot of our technologies.
So I have the last big question coming out of the partner conference that I want to know is, I saw you post a picture of Carrie Underwood. So how is she?
Carrie Underwood's a sweetheart. As much as I'd love to say I got to hang out with her and her crew for the whole night, it didn't really work that way. But in the brief interaction we had, she's very sweet. She's very low-key. And as you know, she's a great singer. So it was a great opportunity to have met her.
You got a great photo with her. So I'm a little jealous. I'm sure some of our listeners are.
So Dux, other than meeting famous people, you spoke a lot at the conference. I've got down, you spoke about working with government business decision makers. You spoke about business growth with IoT. You spoke about artificial intelligence. You spoke about the City Next program for urban innovation. What was, first of all, did I capture everything? And second of all, what was your favorite subject to talk about and why?
I think, I'm grateful that I had the various opportunities to speak in a quite diverse set of sessions. My favorite session that I did, I would think, is the session I did with one of our partners, H3 Solutions, around AI. So essentially, our session discussed how Microsoft partners can grow their business with Microsoft AI. So we talked about what we're doing with AI as a company, and we talked about how a partner, H3, extended our technologies to work with AI as well. So if you're not familiar, just go to Microsoft.com/AI. Microsoft AI is a suite of technologies that encompasses bots, machine learning, cognitive services, etc. And we kind of talked about how we integrate into our solutions and how it sets us apart as a partner. And then H3 demo what they did with bots and teams and integrate with our AvePoint online services. It was a fun session. There's a lot of partners interested and excited to learn about this. So that was a really good session because, as we all know, AI is the future.
Yeah, that's actually funny you mentioned that. So Twitter user @BinaryBrewery, also known as Dan Usher, posted when we mentioned we were going to be interviewing you, he posted that he'd be curious to know what Meet Dux thinks about teams, bots, and productivity. And you led right into that. What are you most excited about with what Microsoft has done with the Teams bots and productivity capabilities?
Look, I mean, for the longest time, right, the biggest complaint that we hear from folks is, you know, it's too much technology. I got email, I got SharePoint, I got OneDrive, I got this, that, the other. That's why people revert back to email. But I think what Teams have done, right, I love Teams. I use Teams all the time. Teams is my new Outlook, if you may. But the fact that Teams has the capability to connect to other platforms leveraging bots is a game changer. So as an example, the demo our partner did at Inspire, they essentially created a bot that connected to our technology called AvePoint Governance Online. So it's a part of AvePoint Online Services. Essentially, Governance Online allows folks to enforce governance policies across SharePoint, across groups, etc. literally the demo in Teams, he used his phone with Teams and said, hey, can you create a site for me? That's awesome. So essentially through the bot, through the Teams interface, it obviously checked that person's permission, that person created a site, and it contacted AppPoint Online Services, Governance Online, and based on that policy, responded back, what kind of site do you want? So Team became the interface. So there's the potential that in the future, the user, they don't have to worry about, where do I go to create a site? Or where do I go to do this? All that could be surfaced through Teams. And that's just a very simple example. Certainly Teams provide that chat-based workspace, document sharing, a lot of the common and basic workloads. But what's exciting to me, it's a bot integration and being able to tap into other line of business systems through that single interface.
For the longest time, bots were little more than the ability to ask a computer system about, for example, the newest Doctor, which, by the way, was announced yesterday, if anybody's interested in Doctor Who. You know, so it's interesting to see that these bots are actually becoming something not only that you're interacting with for knowledge and information, but that you can use to do something with. So in this case, you were talking about creating a new site, checking permissions, not having to engage the help desk. That's really cool stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially if you think about end users, right? If you can have natural language as a part of the way to interact, and if you can have a single interface, that just changes the game.
Yeah, so my follow-up kind of question to that is, so we're talking about bots, and it sounds technical, and as you said earlier, like users seem overwhelmed with the technology. So Microsoft's doing a good job of trying to make a one thing to rule them all type thing, or a place where you can go and get a lot of information and do a lot of things. And the bots work cool. My question is, as a CTO, what appeals to you at that C-level suite? Because a lot of times I hear, you know, just around the SharePoint community and things like that, different events that we go to, which are highly technical driven and tech people, how do we get to the C-level? What do we need to say to appeal to that level of executive that hey, we've got a product that can help you find answers to solutions, or Microsoft has a product to find answers to solutions, or even if it's not Microsoft, it's, you know, what's IBM doing? It's how and what at that, how do we get to that key level decision maker, and what are they actually looking for to find out from us?
No, that's a great question, Craig. You know, one of the issues and challenges a lot of C-level faces is they put a lot of investment in these technologies and there's no adoption. That's a big problem, right? That's one. Second is another issue is, while all these technologies are there, the biggest challenge and issue today is in the area of data breaches or violations. So by having these technologies like bots and AI, I can confidently say it can make it easy for users to do the right thing. Because, for example, we all know this with SharePoint, where we plead and beg and tell people to use SharePoint appropriately, and it's never done. Why? To us, it's easy, but to the users, it's unnatural. It's too hard. I got to go to a browser. But what if through technologies like bots or as a part of, for example, Microsoft AI, they have a interface called Lewis, be able to bridge that gap, right? Where we lower the barrier to entry, make it easy for the users to do the right thing. They don't have to remember all the policies. They don't have to remember, you know, where they need to go. In this case, they could go to Teams. And who knows, you may be able to integrate bots with Skype or Outlook, just the common tools people use day in, day out. But then the bots and the AI would take care of making sure they remember all the policies, making sure people are doing the right thing. I think that alone would be a great value prop to a lot of C-level decision makers.
Cool. Yes, great explanation. And, you know, I think something that is very helpful for especially somebody like, you know, me that works into kind of like the pre-sales, and we do a lot of talking to the C-level people to ask them what kind of problems they're trying to solve and how can we better explain our technology and what our stuff does to help them solve their solutions. So I appreciate.
Even with AI, right? Like, this is so new. A lot of people just don't know what they don't know. This is the part where we could be that trusted advisor to propose a solution like this and say, hey, look, I know investing in a specific technology takes a lot of resources, but what if the technology can not only, again, drive better adoption, but can ensure policies are better enforced in an easy way. I think that alone is a huge value proposition.
Yeah, because we're no longer able to just build a piece of software and release it. We've actually got to get people trained to use it. We've got to get them to understand the value of using it. And then we've got to make sure that once it's deployed, 3 months down the line, is it working as we expect it to? The fact that the amount of data we're collecting about usage and the fact that the tools are getting smarter, I think, can help make that a lot easier.
So we would like to take a little bit of a left turn here and get away from so much the product and the technology. And, we have this segment that we do with our interviews because we interview some really good influencers in the community. And can you tell us about, and you obviously are one, you're a Microsoft MVP, you're a Microsoft partner, you've been everywhere speaking. I think you were in Australia a little bit earlier this year. Actually, I know you were, which I was, again, jealous of. I'm living my life vicariously through you now, Dex. You're going to all the best places and seeing all the best people. So can you talk about how you got there?
You know, Craig and Jay, you can't believe everything you see on social, right? I still actually do a lot of work. Just so you know.
It's all fake news. Dux is, no. But yeah, can you talk about how you even got started in becoming this big, powerful influencer that everybody in the community looks up to?
Well, first of all, thank you. I enjoy what I do. And people ask me, like, how'd you get started and all that? I would tell everybody, I mean, as long as you enjoy and passionate what you're doing, the community and the broader industry will take notice. But in all transparency, right? So when I started my career in the mid 90s and when I started my business back then, imagine being a 1-2 person shop. You're not going to have endless budgets for marketing and sales and it's tough, right? And when it comes to being able to get work and get that paycheck to take care of your family, you got to be creative in how to get out there. So I had the good opportunity to author a book, SharePoint for Project Management, and that kind of became my springboard. So when I wrote that book, I have to thank O'Reilly Media. They start talking to me about this concept of thought leadership or influencer marketing. At that time, it was just starting. So they said, look, start writing blogs about the topic you're passionate about, your expertise, and people want to buy. They don't want to be sold to. So that kind of stuck in my head, which is true, right? Because at that time, people I look up to are authors or techies who shares a lot of great technical information. So I started doing that. And then Twitter was relatively new. So I signed up with Twitter. It's free. It's still free. And the premise I always stuck to is it's not about tooting my own horn, but it's about adding value and promoting others. And that's what I just kept doing through the years, right? And as a result, the other big thing that I think that kind of allowed me to gain more exposure is how I set myself apart. So, Jay was mentioning earlier about me being crazy and dancing and singing. All that is calculated because when I was working in that small business, I said, look, this is a big industry. Fine, I've written a book, I'm writing blogs, but I still need more visibility and I got to take it to the next level. How can I be different than everybody else speaking at a conference? How can I be memorable, right? So from the glasses that I wear, how my outfit is, the way I speak, the way I sing or dance, all that's part of the package. Hence the in good or bad, the visibility. So yeah, and just through the years, I just kept at it. And fast forward to today, again, I'm grateful and very privileged to still be quite active in the community.
You've got the, you do Ducks Quacks at a lot of the events, and more recently you did Ducks Cab Confessions, although I don't think that's the exact name you used for it. Do you have anything coming up like that anytime soon?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're looking forward to Ignite, and this is kind of teaser for everyone listening is we're going to do a lot for Ignite, so stay tuned. It's not just me, but we're going to pull all the punches here and have a lot of great multimedia learning experience in all the channels out there. So stay tuned.
That sounds cool. Sounds exciting.
So Dux, at this point in the interview, you know, we, first of all, thank you for the great content. We like to jump into what we call our lightning round. We've got a handful of quick questions. You are more than welcome to answer one word or provide an explanation for it as you see appropriate. We'll start off with this, I think more than previous years, this is definitely the summer of the superhero. Who is your favorite superhero?
Iron Man.
Nice. He's got some really good movies. So, like, I don't know. I got nothing first. I wasn't expecting Iron Man. So, I'm a Spider-Man guy. So, and he just released a movie. So, with Ignite coming up this year, and it's going to be at their big event, is going to be at Universal Studios, and it's in Orlando. Thinking about that whole area, what is your preference? Do you see Harry Potter world, the new Star Wars world that they just announced is going to be coming out in Disney in 2019, and we got Pandora at Disney's Animal Kingdom.
So what do I look forward to? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, which one of those would you look forward to the most?
I would say the Star Wars one.
Yeah, that looked like it's going to be pretty cool. I just read yesterday that they're going to do a Star Wars themed resort where even like the staff will be dressed up like characters from Star Wars.
Yeah, I heard about that. Like the hotel, you'll have a full-on experience.
Yeah, so that should be awesome.
So Dux, let's go technology. What is your favorite dead technology?
Windows Phone.
Yes.
We discussed that last...
I have a feeling that will continue to find its way into all of our podcasts. Last week, Craig showed me his old Windows Phone. We're both Windows Phone users, or former Windows Phone users.
So you're into podcasts and you've done a lot of stuff in this space. Which ones are you currently listening to?
I listen to a couple. So on my drive into work, I listen to Freakonomics. I listen to Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast. I started listening to a new one called Future. It's a Microsoft podcast. It's .future, actually. So that's pretty good. And then lastly, I listen to another one called Radical Candor.
Radical Candor.
Right. Radical Candor is off of a book, and it's actually pretty cool. The idea is, how can you care personally but challenge directly amongst your peers, amongst your teammates, so you can get the job done?
That sounds interesting. All right. I know what's going on my list soon. So, Dux, you're a big song and dance man. In your presentations, what song do you just have to get up and dance to, or at least nod your head to when it comes on the radio?
These days?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Everybody's favorite, Despacito.
Oh, this morning on Facebook, I don't even know if I should say this, a parody of that came up called Speedo, or I Wear Speedos came up.
Yeah, and I'm proud that that guy's my fellow Filipino, Mikey Bustos. Okay. It's called I Love Speedos, right? It was pretty funny.
That was hysterical.
Okay, for the last question in our not-so-lightning round this time, we have a dinosaur question. What is your favorite dinosaur, Brontosaurus or Triceratops?
Oh, Triceratops.
All right. So, Dux, really appreciate your time today. We think this has been a great conversation, and hopefully hopefully our listeners got something out of it. If they have any follow-up questions, do you have any preferred methods that they can reach out to you?
Yeah, just hit me up on Twitter, MeetDux, MeetDux, and looking forward to engage with you all. Thanks for having me, and all the best with the podcast.
Yes, thanks again. It was great talking to you, and great that you would take the time to talk to us.
Of course.
Thanks so much, Dux.
All right, take care.
So that was Dux Raymond-Tsai. I really enjoy speaking with Dux. I think I said it in the interview. I saw Dux speak about 6 years ago, and I said, I need to work for this man. I need to get a little bit of that energy. He really engages you. He brings some really interesting facts to the conversation. In fact, I learned about some podcasts that I'm going to put into my pod player this week. Radical Candor, that's the one I'm really looking forward to. I think it's good. What do you think?
I think it was good, too. And I think that you should put links to the podcast in our show notes so that or everybody else can find it too. I really liked the conversation that we had. I like the versions where he was talking about the C-suite and what they look for, and so some high level stuff there that I think a lot of listeners can get some information from. So I thought it was really good. I liked it.
So Craig, coming up in the next couple weeks, we don't have a lot in today's exit, but I do want to point out that SharePoint Saturday New York is coming up. It's July 29th. AvPoint's AvePoint employees DRC Hess and John Peluso are going to be there speaking along with 61 other SharePoint experts. It's not just for developers and IT pros. SharePoint Saturdays have evolved. They include tracks for business solutions. They include tracks for the traditional developer in IT. They often have tracks for security. You know this because you speak at them a lot more than I do. And it is my recommendation, if you are listening to this podcast, you should attend your local SharePoint Saturday. So if you're there, say hi to DRC, say hi to John.
Yeah, like you said, they're a great opportunity to meet the best and the brightest in the SharePoint Office 365 and even Azure world. We're incorporating a lot more of Microsoft's total solutions into the events. The other thing that is good is after they give their little presentations, a lot of times they're available and more than willing to answer any questions that you have. So, you know, a lot of times you can get that little information about your specific project, you know, so it's not like getting a contractor, but you know, you can get a little information that you might not get anywhere else too. So that's always good. And speaking of which, what's coming up in our next episode, Jay?
Next week, we're going to talk about what to use when. So Office 365 has a ton of new tools coming at you. In the last 6 to 12 months, we've seen things like Delve come out. We've seen things like Power BI get enhanced. We've seen things like Groups and Teams all get thrown at us, and we don't really know what to do with them. So AvePoint has a lot of good resources on the website, and we are looking forward to being able to bring some of that to you in our podcast next week. Not next week. It should come out by the end of the month, and I think it's going to be a really good conversation.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of good things, and you know, there's even Office Graph, and there's the old SharePoint Online and Yammer that people are wondering, well, what do we do with those, you know, now that these new technologies are? But I think that's going to be a great conversation.
So, Craig, we introduced it last week. We asked Ducks about it a little bit. Fact of the day, some dinosaur tails were over 45 feet long. Most dinosaurs had long tails that helped them keep their balance while running. I think if I had a tail, I don't know that that would help me run, but that's a different conversation, different physiology.
I like the dinosaur reference. Good job, Jay. We can always count on you for information that's totally useful, but still mildly entertaining.
not even remotely useful. Craig, it's been a pleasure as always. I look forward to speaking to you again next week.
All right. Good night and good luck.
All right.